Thanks.
And we're holding on page Lamed Hey in Sanhedrin, Ois Ayin Tes. We've been learning the last couple of days about the whole story with Achan, with Yeshua and Achan and Yericho, where Yeshua had put a cherem on the spoils of Yericho, and Achan took some of the spoils, and then the rest of the Jewish people got in trouble. In particular, when they went to their next battle against the city of Ai, then the Jewish people were routed and ran away, and we said that Kish Loish and Beshisha Ish were killed. If we said Kish Loish and Beshisha, can either mean literally 36 people, or it can mean one person, Yerub and Menashe, who was of the caliber of like 36 people, like the majority of the Sanhedrin.
And they got punished because of one person.
Because of the one person, because like we learned before, there was Arevos at that point. We had a Machlok, the Sir Yehuda and Reb Nechemya. Now, after they had crossed the Yarden, and after they had gone to Har Grizim and Har Evel, was there now, Rabbi Yehuda had held that there's Arevus now, even for Nistoris, even for hidden Averus, as long as Marsha had said, as long as there's some reasonable chance that the Jews could know that somebody is doing this kind of thing, like here, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, Hashem criticizes Yeshua and said, you shouldn't have made this Cherem, but once he made it, he should have set up guards to see to it that nobody violates it. Or, according to Reb Nechemya, it's only for Niglois that they were punished, but not even from Nistoris at all, but here his wife and kids knew about it, so therefore it's not really Nistoris anymore. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Mishlei, tachnunim yedaber rosh, the poor person speaks in a pleading way, but the rich person, Yana Azois, answers or speaks up in a brazen way. So what is the pasuk? Of course, the simple meaning of the pasuk is simple enough that it means that a poor person, when he's asking for something, asks in a very pleading and then gentle tone, whereas a rich man is more likely to tell you to order you around. But the Gemara wants a deeper meaning in it. So tachnunim yedaber rosh zem Moshe. So the first half of the pasuk about the poor person speaking in a very pleading in a way of supplication and pleading zem Moshe, that refers to Moshe. Why is Moshe called a rosh? So Marsha points out because he wasn't able to conquer Eretz Yisrael. So all he was able to do in his lifetime was conquer the lands of Sichon and Og. As opposed to Yeshua, we're going to go on to say, conquered most of Eretz Yisrael proper, so therefore, relative to that, Yeshua is rich and Moshe is not. Related to that is also, of course, that Moshe wasn't even able to go into Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua was, so therefore, relatively speaking, Moshe can be called Rosh. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well, that this was the end of Moshe's career as leader of the Jewish people. And there's a pasuk in Kehelos, Ein Shilton B'Yamamoves, there's no rulership on the day of death. So fine, this isn't literally on the day, but it's close enough, so therefore like Moshe's power is waning, kind of. Therefore, relatively speaking, he's Rosh, as opposed to Yeshua, when the story here with the Battle of Ai happened, he was at the beginning of his career. He still had many more years to go to lead the Jewish people, and therefore he's called an Oshu. Okay, so Tachnunim Yedaber Rosh the Moshe, but Oshu Yana Azos, but when the pasuk continues, the rich man speaks up in a brazen way, Zay Yoshua. So that would be Yoshua. So now we have to figure out my timer. What do we mean? In what way do we see that Yoshua spoke in a very harsh and brazen way to Hashem? We learned at the end yesterday, we said that when they found all the spoils buried in Achan's tent, so we said Yeshua took them by Yatsikum Lifnei Hashem, and he threw them on the ground in front of Hashem and said, Hayitochen, that so many people were killed because of this. So is it because of that? Is it because of that pasuk that they poured them out or spilled them out before Hashem? And we just said that Rav Nachman had said he went and threw them down in front of Hashem and complained, Hashem, hayitochen, that because of these few items from the spoils, therefore you caused Jews to be killed. So you're going to say that's a brazen way to talk to Hashem. Well, Yeshua is not the only one. Otu Pinchas le'ovad hachi, didn't Pinchas already do the very same thing? Dichtiv, the pasuk says in Tillim, when it tells briefly about what was going on, and there was a plague, and the pasuk says Vayamid Pinchas vayefalel. Pinchas got up and vayefalel. Now the simple meaning of vayefalel is he executed judgment, as in we know he went into the tent over there and stabbed Zimri and Cosby, and the pasuk says Vata'otza hamagefa, and then the plague stopped. But it doesn't just mean that. It means Amar Rabbi Elazar by Yispala Lo Neymar. Now, if it meant in that, now it can also mean though that he davened to Hashem. But then the expected word for that would be by Yispala and he davened. Instead, Ela Vayifalel. Instead, it says Vayifalel, which is a loshen melamed she'osa plilus in koinoi. Means he came to judgment. He came with an argument like in a din Torah before Hashem. Namely, Bava Chavson Lifnei HaMakom, after he had stabbed and killed Zimri and Cosby, also he threw them down, he threw down their bodies before Hashem, Amalafonim, and he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Elu Yitla Esrim Abba Elach Yisrael, is it right that because of these two and their Aveda, 24,000 Jews were killed? Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, at the end of Parshas Balak, Vayu Amesim Bamagefa Abba V'Esrim Olaf. So in other words, the point is, so you're going to say that's a brazen thing, a chutzpahdika way to talk to Hashem, to throw something down and complain, Hayitoch and Hashem, you would do this. We see that Pinchas already did it, so we can't hold it only against Yeshua that he did such a thing as well.
Pinchas was after the fact, but they were dead or anything.
No, that's the point. He's saying, Hashem, Hayitoch, that you caused a plague because of these two. So now he's complaining after the fact. Now, Marsha points out, the difference is, Achan was the only one who took from the spoils. Zimri was not the only guy, or the only Jewish man, who got involved with Benois Midian and Benois Moab over there. We have many others as well, right? Some there are Laval Pa'ur. Nevertheless, Marsha says, since we see that as soon as Pinchas stabbed these two, then immediately the plague stopped, like Otsar Amagefa, then we have to understand the plague was mainly caused by Hashem was upset over Hayitochen, that a Nossi of a Shevet, Zimri was the Nossi of Shevet Shimon, that he's going and doing such a thing. In other words, the regular run-of-the-mill Jews, you do it, okay, you know, it's a wrong thing for them to do, but Hashem is not going to cause a plague because of that. When you have a Nossi involved, that's a whole different matter. Anyway, the point is that, again, just throwing someone or something down before Hashem and complaining is not necessarily considered azois. Otherwise, why would we say that? Specifically, Yeshua, who's called Osher Yana Azois, when you could say the same thing about Pinchas. The Elamehacha, are you going to say that maybe it comes from this story over here, from earlier in the story, where Yeshua, in his tefillah to Hashem, he says, Loma he'avarte ha'aver esa omazeh esa yardin. He says, Hashem, why did you make these people cross the yardin? In other words, it sounds like he's complaining against Hashem. Why'd you bring us across the yardin in Eretz Yisrael? So you're going to say that's called azois. And in fact, of course, one thing, as we've learned before, that crossing the yardin also brought in arevos for the Nistaris, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for the Niglois, according to Rabbi Nehemiah. So therefore, you could say that Yeshua maybe has a point. Why did we cross the yardin? If we had stayed in Eivra Yardin, then we wouldn't have this level of arevos, and nobody would have gotten in trouble except Achan himself. But so you're going to say that that's considered azois, but Moshe Nami Meima Omar. Moshe also speaks in a way like that to Hashem. Loma Hare Osa Lama Zeh. And Parashat Shmos, when Moshe and Aaron have first gone to Parah, and Parah says, no, Tichbad Avod Al Anoshim, we're going to make the work even harder for the Jews. So Moshe also spoke in a querulous, complaining tone like that. Now, we're not saying that Moshe was right in that. Maharsha points out, we do have, near the end of the Masechta, the Gemara is going to mention that Hashem did not like Moshe speaking to him that way, and in fact Moshe himself was punished for that, namely that Hashem tells him, after Sira, now you're going to see what I'm going to do to Paray, but you're not going to see what's going to happen to the 31 kings in Eretz Canaan. Fine, so it's not that Moshe was right in doing that, but the point is, then it's no worse what Yeshua did than what Moshe did, so why would Shlomo be describing it as well, that Moshe spoke Tachnunim, and only Yeshua is Yana Azis. So no, that's not it. So no, Elamai Hocha, it's rather from the next words that Yeshua says. After he says, why'd you make us cross the Yarden? He continues, V'lu hay alnu v'anesha ve'evra Yarden. If only we had agreed to just stay in Evra Yarden. So that's an Azus kind of thing to say to Hashem. Hashem told them to go into Eretz Yisrael, and Yeshua is saying we would have been better off not disobeying and staying in Evra Yarden. So therefore that can be characterized as Azus.
In a way, it's almost
in a certain way like what the Meraglim are saying, right? So therefore, Shlomo HaMelech summarizes it and says that can be called Azus, to say it would have been better if we hadn't kept your mitzvahs. Yeah. Okay. Next, so Hashem replies to Yeshua and he says, "Vayomer Hashem al Yeshua kum loch." Hashem says to Yeshua, "Get yourself up." Now, what's this word kum loch? What's this loch over here? So loch implies, it's your thing, it's your fault. So what happened? Dorash Reb Shila. So Dorash Reb Shila. So Reb Shila gives a Dorasha. Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that Hashem is saying to Yeshua, Shalcha Kashim Mishalahem. What you did, as we're about to explain, is in a way worse than what they did. You did a more serious Aveda than what they did. I had said, when you cross the Yarden, then you should set up the stones on Har Grizim and Har Evo, and you should have the brachas of Klolos and do that whole ceremony. And you went 60 mil away from the Yarden to go to Har Grizim and Har Evo. So therefore, Hashem is saying to Moshe, you did wrong in that. Now, Tosa says, what do you want from Yeshua? Geographically, Har Grizim and Har Evel are located on the two sides of Shechem, which is a fair distance from the Yarden. What do you want from Yeshua? So Tosa explains, based on the Gemara in Soita, and based on a Yerushalmi over there that talks about there's we usually understand that Har Grizim and Har Evel are the well-known mountains of that name that are located on both sides of Shechem. But there's an opinion over there that says, Rabbi Eliezer says, actually what it was is they made two mounds of dirt by the Yarden, and they named one Har Grizim and named the other one Har Evel, and they made the Brachas of Klolos over there. So now Rabbi Shila is saying, following that opinion, that Rabbi Shila is saying, in that case, so Hashem is telling Yeshua, you took it too literally. You understood Har Grizim and Har Evel to be the mountains of those names, where you should have realized that instead you're supposed to set up two piles of dirt near the Yarden and give them those names and do the brachas of Klolos over there. How was he supposed to know? I mean, he had been taught by Moshe Rabbeinu. So obviously, Hashem, either he had been taught, either we would have to say, according to this opinion, that he'd been taught explicitly by Moshe Rabbeinu, or that he should have figured out for himself that this is the right thing to do, especially because the pasuk says, V'hoya by yoy masha tabu es hayarden, on the day you cross the Yarden, whereas V'derech HaTel, now, the Gemara in Sota, the Bavli in Sota doesn't have this whole point about the two piles of dirt. And there it takes it as written, that it means how grisim and how evil the actual ones. And the Gemara says, there was a nest that happened that they were able to travel 120 mil in the one day, 60 there and 60 back, and so it was all on the same day. But Rav Shila then would be following, as Tosfos was saying, another opinion on the subject. The Rif points out over here that after all, you know, even according to that opinion, what Yeshua did is not completely going against what Hashem said. Hashem said that on that day, back in Moshe Lacha, Vonim Gedolos, you should set up big stones and plaster them and so forth. So Yeshua understood it to be two different things. He has to set up stones by the Yarden, which he did do that day, and then they have to go to Har Grizim and Har Evel at some later date. There was, by the way, even an opinion there was an opinion, I think it's Sifri, I don't remember, that says that actually the Har Grizim and Har Evel ceremony was actually 14 years after they entered Eretz Yisrael. After the whole kibbutz v'chiluk, in the psukim, by the way, it doesn't even have it in the psukim. It has it only after this whole battle with Ai. You have the story with conquering Yericho is in Yeshua Perek Vav, and that's where the chayim is declared. Achan and his whole story is in Perek Zion. Perek Ches, they go and fight against Ai again and conquer it. And only at the end of that perek does it tell about the Har Grizim and Har Evel ceremony. So it's not even mentioned in its proper place. Maharshal points out that here Hashem is saying that you did it too late, so you have to say in Mukdam Uchabat Torah. This is one of those examples where the pasuk says things out of order. So that was Reb Shila's explanation of what Yeshua had done wrong, and therefore Hashem is saying, Kum Lach, it's you did something even worse than they did, so don't complain that why I'm not on the side of the Jewish people when you did something even worse. However, Basa Dinafik, after Rav Shila had left, Ukim Rav Amora Alei V'Dorash. Then Rav set up an Amora in front of him, and he said a different drasha. Rav Shila, we find in a few places in Shas, was a major Rosh Hashiva in Bavel. Rav was born in Bavel, and he grew up there originally, but then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He became one of Rebbe's Talmidim over there, and he lived there for many years. Only later in life, he moved back to Bavel. And when he moved back to Bavel, by the way, he worked very hard to make, there were places in Bavel where the people were total Amei Oretz, and he worked hard to make Bavel, the whole Bavel, into a Mokum Torah. So much so, we find in some places in Shas that they considered, when Rav came to Bavel, they considered it like a new era in the history of the Jews of Bavel. Kind of like what we think of in terms of the Friedrich Rebbe and the Rebbe coming to America in Tufshin Aleph and a new era beginning in Jewish life in America. That was how they looked at Rav coming to Babel. In any case, we find that Reb Shila was the senior Rosh Hashiva in Babel at the time, so Rav wasn't going to openly contradict him to his face, so he waited until he left, and then Rav said, now I'm going to take over. I'll say it to Rosh to disagree with what Reb Shila said, and he set up an Amora, as a Rosh Hashiva would usually have in those days, somebody to announce to the public what he's going to say, because usually the Rosh Hashiva would say his points quietly and briefly, and then the Amora would explain it in more detail. Anyway, V'dorash and Rav Darshan as follows, differently than what Reb Shila had said. After it talks about the various battles that they fought to conquer most of Eretz Yisrael, the Pasuk summarizes, Kashet Siva Hashem as Moshe Avdoi, just as Hashem commanded his servant Moshe, King Siva Moshe as Yeshua, this is what Moshe exactly commanded Yeshua, V'chein also Yeshua, and this is exactly what Yeshua did, he did not omit one single thing of what Hashem told Moshe. So Rav is saying, here Reb Shila had explained that Hashem is telling Yeshua, you did something very wrong, you didn't follow Moshe's instructions. But no, says Rav, it's very clear from the Pasuk that Yeshua followed all the exact instructions that he received from Moshe, who in turn received them from Hashem. Im Kain, so Rav says in his drosha, Matam Adlaim Kumloch, well then what does Hashem mean by the Kumloch? What is he, in what way is he blaming Yeshua for what happened? He says, Omalei, Hashem tells him, after Garam Talahem means you caused it, you caused this whole matter by making a Cherem in the first place. You shouldn't have put the spoils of Yericha under a Cherem because now you created a Michshol for the people. And if you did, as we learned before, you should have at least put up guards to make sure that nobody loots. So now Mao Shah points out, we just learned yesterday, we said that Moshe did the same thing during his battles. As we said, Ochon had done this kind of thing, taking from the spoils multiple times. But the point is, as we said, there was a new dimension of Arevus that came in once they entered Eretz Yisrael proper. So they were, according to Yehuda, now they're punishable for Nistoris, before they weren't. According to Nehemiah, now they're punishable for Niglos, where before they weren't. So therefore, Moshe making a cherem on the spoils from Melech Arad, from Aknani Melech Arad, and from Sichon and Oig and so forth, no problem. Even if somebody violates it, the whole rest of the Jewish people aren't going to get in trouble. But now that they're in Eretz Yisrael, and Yeshua is aware that now they have this new level of Arevos, so now Hashem can tell them, you shouldn't have just blindly went and made a Cherem, just like Moshe did. You should have realized different circumstances, and therefore be careful not to make a Cherem, because people might violate it. So therefore Hashem can blame him for that.
Why do they have to guess what they were supposed to do?
What do you mean they have to guess? Moshe was Yeshua was taught by Moshe. But you know what? I'll tell you. Well, you know, I don't know if it directly relates to this Gemara, but there is a Gemara.
Three or four things since this in the last few minutes.
Okay, so in other words, Yeshua, obviously Yeshua is supposed to know more than you or I know. You know, I mean, he learned directly from Moshe. Okay. But I'll tell you. With that said, though, there was a possibly relevant Gemara in Tzmura that says that before Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, he says to Yeshua, you know, this is your last opportunity. If there's anything that you're unclear on, then now's your time to ask. And Yeshua says, Moshe, I've been learning by you daily and diligently 40 years. I think I know it all. Then when Moshe passed away, it says that Yeshua and the rest of the Jewish people in their grief also forgot hundreds of details of halachas and things. Later on, Osnir ben Knaz had to reconstruct them with his pupil. But it could be, maybe some of these details we're talking about, maybe Hashem is blaming Yeshua that he didn't, that he brought about a circumstance where he forgot these things and therefore wasn't clear. So Rav is saying he didn't blatantly go and violate something that Moshe had told him, like Reb Shila had said. But nevertheless, in other words, there's still, he should have taken this point into consideration. Okay. Thus we find, by the battle with Ai, Hashem tells Yeshua, do to Ai and to its king, just like you did to Yericha and its king, namely, burn down the city, kill the king, rack and kill all the people, rack shlolo vehemta tavoza lachem, but take all the spoils and all the animals for yourself. So Hashem is telling Yeshua, don't do that kind of thing with a cherem again. This time let people take the spoils, that way nobody's going to get in trouble for taking what they shouldn't. Okay. There's other points as well. Rashi on the pasuk and over there near Shur mentions another point with the kumloch. First of all, there are a couple of other meanings that Chazal tell us. First, on one level, it means as a positive thing. Kumloch, the word kum over there, is spelled kuf mem without the vav in the middle, so it can be reread as kumloch. It's stood up for you. Your tefillah has stood up for you, and yes, now I'm gonna answer your tefillah, and I'm gonna help you find who did wrong through the girdle, and that way you'll be able to get everybody back in good shape. The other explanation is it also means in a negative thing, Hashem tells Yeshua, you sent the Jewish people to war against Ai, and you didn't lead them. Moshe, when he asked Hashem, appoint somebody in Parshas Pinchas, Yifkad Hashem, the Kei Aruchus, Ishala'edah, he says, Asher Yetzir Lifneim, Asher Yovel Lifneim, a leader of the Jewish people is expected to go into the battle ahead of the people and return from the battle ahead of them, and Hashem tells Yeshua, you didn't do that, you stayed behind and sent a strike force against Ai, you shouldn't have done that. And in fact, in the next battle with Ai, we see Yeshua actually leading the troops. Having talked about the war with Yericho, so now the Gemara digresses a little further to talk about something that happened right before the battle over there. The pasuk says, "Vayhi b'Yos Yeshua b'Yericho," when Yeshua was in Yericho, and the Gemara elsewhere explains, doesn't actually mean in Yericho, because this is in Yeshua Perek Hei, and Yericho is conquered only in Perek Vav. So it means that Yeshua was in the outskirts of Yericho. The Gemara derives from this that the outskirts of the city, Ibura Shalir, the area near the city, can be considered like the city itself for certain purposes in Halacha. Anyway, so Yeshua was there. Vayista Eina Vayar, he lifted up his eyes and he saw the Gemara, and he sees a man standing opposite him. So he asks him, Halonu Ata Im Lefarenu, are you on our side or are you on our enemy's side? And Vayomer, and the man answers, Loi, no, meaning neither of the above, Ki ani sar tzva Hashem ata vasi. I am the captain of the armies of Hashem. I have now come. Vayipol Yeshua upon him arzah. So the pasuk says Yeshua fell on his face to the ground. Vayishlochu, and he bowed. So the first question is, Heifi, what? So there's different explanations, different mafoshim about which malach it was. One opinion is indeed it was Malach Matat. We talked about before that back in Parshas Mishpatim, Hashem had told Moshe, I'm going to send a Malach to lead you, and that almost came true after the Chet Ha'Egel, except Moshe said, absolutely not. If you send a Malach, we're not leaving over here. So Hashem said, fine, my Shekhinah will go with you. So now, according to that, then he says, Atabasi, now I've come, meaning your Rebbe, Moshe, didn't want me, but now I'm coming to lead you, So yes, there is that explanation that it was Malach Matat. Another explanation is Malach Mechol. And in fact, there's an interesting thing in that, an interesting remez that's brought in that connection. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu's name doesn't appear in Parshat Tetzaveh. So we know because Moshe said, "Imayin mecheni no misifrachos," that his name is taken out of one parsha. Why Davka Tetzaveh? So the most well-known explanation is because Tetzaveh is always the week of Zion Adar, and that's the day of Moshe's Yosite. But there's another interesting explanation. The number of psukim in Parshat Tetzaveh is 101, and the gematria of that is Michal. The name Michal is Gematria 101. So it symbolizes kind of where Michal is, Moshe can't be. So Moshe doesn't want Michal leading the Jewish people, but now that Moshe's gone, then Michal is back to do the job. And I think there's also an opinion that the Malach over here was Gabriel. He calls himself Sar Tzva Hashem, the captain of Hashem's army, which would suggest Malach Gabriel. Whatever the case. So the question is, Heichi Oven Hochi. The question is, how could Yeshua bow to this Malach? Now, there's a whole discussion among Rishonim whether, in fact, you're even allowed to bow to a Malach. You know, a Malachim are sometimes worshipped as Getchkes, and you're not allowed to bow in it like that to anybody other than Hashem. On the other hand, we know you're allowed to bow to a human being, so there's a variety of different answers. Maybe when a Malach is coming with a Shlichus of Hashem, you are allowed to bow to him, especially sometimes a Malach can even, so to speak, be identified with his Meshaleach, like the Alter Rebbe, for example, points out in one place in Tanya, when it says at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, Vayera Elav Hashem, the Ramban explains, what's the Vayera Elav Hashem? The Malachim came to him. But sometimes they can be, we talked about earlier about Malach Matat, Kishmi B'kirbo, Shmoy Kishem Rabbah, his name is so to speak like the name of Hashem, so therefore maybe in that case you're allowed to bow to him. They also talk about, of course, there could be a difference between bowing to him to worship him versus out of respect. Later in the Masechta, for example, it talks about that if you have a person who makes himself a getchka, like Haman did, then you can't bow to him, but if you're a regular person or a king or whatever, you're allowed to bow to him out of respect. So maybe there's that. And there's a number of different points that different Rishonim make on that point of whether in fact you're allowed to bow to a Malach or not. One interesting thing in that connection that's worth mentioning, actually, the Riaz, Rabbi Shaya Achron, this is one of the middle Rishonim. There's a commentary on the Rif called Shulte Agiborim, which quotes a lot of his psukim. He says, by the same token, for example, if you're not supposed to bow to anything other than Hashem, he says, for example, when the Oren Kodesh is open, by all means, you stand out of respect for the Sefer Torah, but don't bow to them. So I don't know if that's accepted, if that's accepted, lahalacha, but there is that interesting point that you have to be careful who or what you're bowing to. Anyway, but here the Gemara is focusing on another point. It was obviously at night, Rashi points out, because Yeshua is saying, halonu after in l'tzareinu. Are you on our side or are you on the enemy's side? If it was by day, he'd be able to see. Does he look like a yid or does he look like a goy? So therefore we have to understand that it was at night.
Is that the source of that verse?
What, halonu after in l'tzareinu? Yeah. So if it was at night and he couldn't recognize him, then how do you know? Va'amr Rabbi Yochanan says, a person is not allowed to say shalom to somebody else at night, because we're afraid that's not his friend, the person. It might be a shed, and it would be inappropriate to mention shalom is considered to a certain extent the name of Hashem. For example, there's the halacha, you're not allowed to say shalom in the bathhouse or in the bathroom or whatever. So therefore, you have some people, when the same way as you have people have a name that ends with a yud and a hey, they put a tick instead of a hey. Sometimes some people do that with the name Shalom as well. They'll write Shin Lamed Vav on a tick rather than writing out the whole name Shalom. Anyway, the point is that you shouldn't use the name of Hashem to greet a shed. You certainly shouldn't bow to it. So after that would really be like bowing to Avodah Zarah. So how could Yeshua be bowing to this person when he doesn't know whether it's a person or a shed, given that it's at night? Now, Tosva says, this is only talking about, this Isser would only be like if you're out in the fields or in the mountains or whatever where you don't usually find people. And those are the kinds of places where Shadim hang out. If it's in the city, Tosva says, then so even by day, there might potentially be a problem of their Shadim. If it's in the city, Tosva says, by night, there's not a problem. Otherwise, how would you ever be able to say Shalom to somebody at night in the city? So in the city, it's different. Shadim are not usually prevalent over there. So how is he bowing to this person? So the answer is Shiny Hossam to Kamala Ani Sarsro Hashem at the Bossi, because he says he identifies himself, I'm the captain of Hashem's army and I've now come. So therefore he's not a shed. Okay, the question is, Vidum Shakri, so what? If it's a shed, he could be lying. The answer is, Gmiri Dele Mapki Shem Shamayim Vatala. Even the Shadim, they're Kurchas Atumah, but we know for a fact that they don't use Hashem's name in vain. As much as they're Kurchas Atumah, as much as they're Klippas, they know they have a certain respect for Hashem. They know they recognize that, after all, they recognize that Hashem created them, and they're not going to use Hashem's name in vain. So once he says, Sarts for Hashem, then Yeshua knows it's not a shed. Okay. Now, what did this Malach have to tell Yeshua? So when he says, Ani starts to Hashem after Bossi, so the Gemara understands that there's a subtext in there. Omalei, the Malach says to Yeshua, Emesh bitaltem tomet shaben abayim. Yesterday, you mevato, earlier today, this was at night again, so earlier today, this afternoon, you failed to bring the tomet shaben abayim, because you were busy with the preparations for the war for Yerichai. And now, at night, you're being mevatel Talmud Torah. You're not sitting and looning like you're supposed to. So, in other words, Rashi says, look, by day, I understand you can't be looning Torah because you're busy preparing for war, but at least you have to make it up by night. So, therefore, so Rashi says what you should be doing. Now, at that point, the Machna as a whole was located in the city of Gilgal. So the Malach is telling him, what are you doing over here in the area of Yericho preparing at night? You anyway can't prepare things for war. You should have gone back to Gilgal and be looning and teaching Torah over there. Omalei, so Yeshua says, Al Ezemehem Bosa. Gilgal is where, at that time point, is where the Mishkan was set up, and that's where the Machna as a whole was. The army had gone to Yericho to prepare for the war. But now the Malach is telling him that you should have gone back to Gilgal. In fact, a different Gemara, there's a Gemara in Erevin, also brings this whole piece, and it mentions over there that also that night they didn't bring the Oren back to the Machna and Gilgal like they were supposed to. The result was actually, because again, they were preparing for the siege of Yericho, and when they were doing that, they had the Oren with them. The result was, the Gemara mentions over there, the Jewish people that night were also b'tashmish hamitta, because they're also to do that when the Oren is not in its place. And therefore, the Gemara says Yehoshua was held responsible for that. And because of that, the Gemara says he didn't have any sons, only daughters. Anyway, so Amalei, so Yehoshua says, Al Ezem Mehem Basa, which one are you coming to tell me off for now? Amalei Ata Basi. So the Malach answers, for now. In other words, the Talmud Shabbat Abayim, it's a done deal already, you can't make it up. But I'm coming for what's going on now. Now you have an ability to learn Torah, so don't be slacking off on that. Tosfos in one of these places, I think it's in Eruvin, gives a different pshat in how we learn what's going on over here between the Malach and Yehoshua. Yehoshua asks him, Halonu ata imutzarenu. Now the word lonu represents Torah as in Torah tziva lonu Moshe. Lutzarenu represents the Talmud as in the Korban Talmud protects us from our enemies. Lutzarenu, from our enemies. So Yehoshua is asking, Halonu
Lutzarenu, there is tzar, lonu.
Lutzarenu? Yeah, okay, I guess if you rearrange the letters, yeah, interesting, okay. So Yeshua is asking, are you coming because of Lonu, the Torah, or because of Lutzarenu, because we failed to bring the Talmud? And the Malach answers in Ata Basi, as in the Ata Kisvu Lachem Es Hashira Azois, which refers to writing and learning the Torah. Marsha brings the explanation over here that according to, again, we just said there were different opinions who this Malach was. One opinion is in Malach Michal. Marsha points out the Tosfos at the end of Menachos brings from Midrashim that Michal Hasara Gadol, the great Malach Michal, stands in one of the levels of Shemayim where there's a Mizbeach and he brings their korbanos to Hashem. Tosfos brings two different opinions. He brings the neshamas of tzaddikim closer to Hashem, which it talks about in a lot of places in Siddur, what that means, that he brings them to a higher level of closeness to Elikos, or that he brings kvasim shal esh, that he brings sheep as korbanos made of fire. When we say in davening, the ishe yisrael s'filosim ba'avis kabel b'rotzen, so that's one meaning of when we say the ishe yisrael means that Hashem accept the fire offerings that now Michal is bringing on our behalf in Shemayim. In any case, the Maharsha says that's why Michal is particularly bothered over the fact that they didn't bring the Talmud Shabbat on by him, but nevertheless, he's telling Yeshua, look, you know, that's a done deal already, but at least you should be learning Torah, which is greater even than the Tamidim. Miyad, so right away, as the pasuk says, Vayelech or Vayolam Yeshua, Balaylo Ahu B'Seicha Emek. Yeshua went, or he stayed over that night in the valley. There are two psukim in Perek Ches of Yeshua, a few psukim apart. One of them is Vayolam Yeshua, Balaylo Ahu B'Seicha Om, and the other is Vayelech Yeshua, Balaylo Ahu B'Seicha Emek. So the Gemara is kind of combining together the two psukim. Tosfos points out the Gemara does that sometimes. But it means, what does this mean that he went or that he stayed overnight in the Emek? The simple meaning, of course, of Emek is the valley. But it means that night Yeshua went or stayed over in the depths of halacha. So he took to heart what the Malach had said, and he stayed that night learning Torah. And he didn't from now on he didn't start preparing sieges at night. So now therefore instead he would spend the night b'secha emet in the deep depths of learning Torah. Now those psukim I'm actually talking about in the preparations for the battle for the battle of Ai. So this is some time after, again, the Malach confronts him in Yehoshua Perek Hei. Those psukim are in Perek Ches sometime later. So the point is, in other words, that the next time that there was an opportunity to fix up the matter, then Yehoshua did that. When was the next time that they're preparing for a siege, or they're preparing for a siege, for a battle against a place, and they're not going to be doing it at night, is the next time was by the battle of Ai in Perek Ches. There's a fascinating point that the Minchas Elazar brings on this point. He says, first of all, you have to realize, look, they're fighting by day, and by night you have to give them time to rest, and besides, by night there might have to be a surprise attack from the city or whatever. They have to be careful of that, and still the Malach is demanding of them that they should be spending their time learning Torah even on such conditions, and yet that's how it is. And he brings a fascinating thing that he says he learned when he was younger from his Zeda, the Bnei Yisoskar. He said Bnei Yisoskar says at one point a number of the Balei HaTosfos were in jail over some trumped up charge against them, and he had the usual choice that the goyim were always giving them: convert or die. So they're in fear for their lives and what's going to be tomorrow. And that night, he says, they sat and discussed among themselves and composed many of the Lomdisha Tosfos in Bava Metzia, in the seventh Perek of Bava Metzia, in Perek Merubah. In particular, you have one Tosfos over there on Bava Kama, Daf Ein Zayin. You look over there, you have about a line and a half of Gemara on the page, and almost the whole rest of the page is taken up by a gigantic Tosfos. So he says that and other Tosfos and like that, and that Perek, the Balei HaTosfos was sitting that night when they're, when, when, when the next morning they're going to be taken out and be executed, and they were for kiffing zich and Torah like that. So that's shalom ba'umka shalalacha, even under such conditions.
The question is, they are in a siege. If they eat light in order to learn.
No, keep in mind, most learning in those days was Baal Peh. They learned Torah Shabbat, but most learning, especially Umka Shalalocha, the depths of Halocha is going to be Torah Shabbat Peh anyway, so there's nothing written. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay. So the Gemara finishes off this piece. Omer of Shmuel bar Ivyo, Unya Meshmeh Derab, Godol Talmud Torah, Yosem Akrovas Tmidim. You see from this story that bringing learning Torah is greater even than bringing the Korbanos Tamid, Shenema Ata Bossi, as we see that the Malach tells him, I'm coming from now, meaning as bad as it was that you were Mevatel, the Talmud Shabbat Abayim, even worse is that you're not learning Torah and then that's what I'm coming for and not bothering with the other thing. Having talked about a conversation between involving a malach, so now the Gemara brings another drosha involving also a conversation with a malach. He asked Rav Dimi would regularly travel between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, so he was very familiar with how they learnt Torah in the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. So he asked him, the following pasuk that I'm going to quote to you, B'ma'ar Rova, in the west, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, B'maymuk Misulei, how do you understand the following pasuk? The pasuk says, Al teitzei lo rivmaher, don't go quickly into an argument, pen matasa b'achrisa, because what are you going to do at the end of it? B'hachlim ois chore'echa, when your friend ends up insulting you, making you embarrassed, and the next pasuk continues, rivcha rivasre'echa, go ahead and have your argument with your friend, v'soid achar al tegol, but don't blab somebody else's secret. What do you mean? If we're saying, for one thing, if it's saying al teitzei lo riv maher, then why is it saying riv chariv esre'echa? And Maharsha points out the context of the psukim before that is talking kvod elokim haster dover, the honor of Hashem is to conceal certain things. So what's going on in these psukim? So the answer is like this. Rav Dimi says, B'shosha Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yechezkel. There comes a point, Hashem says a nevuah to Yechezkel. Perek Tezayin of Yechezkel is a long mashal where he compares the Jewish people to a baby that was abandoned in the fields and then was almost going to die over there of neglect and then somebody comes by and sees her. We have the Tzukim Va'ever Alayich Va'erch Nesfesesis V'damoyich V'amalach V'damayich Chayi Revovach Etzema Chassad V'nesatich that we say in the Haggadah comes from that. So you have the beginning of that nevuah. Hashem says through the Navi to the Jewish people, Avich ha'emori ve'imech chittis. Your father was an emori and your mother was a chittis. So it sounds like he's saying that. We Jewish people descend from the emori and the chitti. Now Rashi says Terach and his ancestors came from Canaan. Now they're not descended from Canaan. Some Mefoshim say one meaning is it means they acted like the Canaanim. But at that point, so Omra Ruach Paskoinis Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a spirit of Paskoinis, Rashi says Malach Gavriel, Paskoinis literally means like almost like to interrupt. So that Malach comes and says to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Im Yavoyu Avram V'Sarah V'Yamdu L'Fanecha, if Avram and Sarah come and stand before you, Ata Oymer Lahem U'Machlem Oysam, would you say such a thing to their face and embarrass them to call them an Emodi and a Chittis? Rivcha Rivas Re'echa, as the Pasuk says, you want to fight with your friend. V'soidacha Al Tegol, don't go revealing somebody else's secret. Don't go saying negative things against and you need to give musu to the Jewish people, tell them themselves. Don't reveal Avraham and Sarah's secret, because as the post continues, pen matasa b'achrisa, what are you going to do at the end? They're going to come, so to speak, and embarrass you and say, Hashem, how are you talking? How could you say such a thing? Now, what was Hashem, why taka did Hashem say it? Ben Yehoyada points out there are other explanations of what the pasuk means. The Targum translates that it means that in the schus of Avraham and Sarah, I'm going to help you conquer the lands of the Amori and the Chitti. Rashi says over there it means Avraham and Sarah Taka lived among the Amorim and the Chittim, and they never learned from them. Why are you Jewish people not doing the same thing? So now Hashem is like giving an opening for this Ruach Paskoinis to Gabriel to come defend the Jewish people, because Hashem always wants to hear defenses of the Jewish people. By the way, this nevuah is so harsh that actually you have at the end of Masechta Megillah, Rabbi Eliezer says you can't even use that capital as a haftorah because of this pasuk of Vichaymori v'imich Chittis. Now, the halacha is technically not like him, and the Rambam actually gives it as haftorah for Parshas Shmos, and the Yemenites have to do that. Everybody else, Ashkenazim and Sardim, still didn't like the idea of using it as an Haftarah, so they picked other Haftarahs for Parshas Shmos instead.
The Rambam and the Yemenites were very well connected.
That's why. The Yemenites in general follow the Rambam's Pesukim, so yeah. So they actually used the first 13 or 14 Pesukim of that capital, including this Pasuk, as the Haftarah of Parshas Shmos, because it describes very well how the Jewish people were downtrodden and neglected and almost died in Mitzrayim. So that's what's going on with that pasuk. So that's what's going on with this pasuk. I'll take the Riv Maher that the Ruach Paskoinis is saying to Hashem, you don't start off with a quarrel like that and then drag Avraham and Sarah into it. Eitz Yosef brings an interesting thing from Sefer Chassidim. The word is Paskonis, actually, without the Vav, and there's a pasuk in Daniel that refers to a Malach, actually also there, Malach Gabriel, refers to him as Ir the Kaddish, a wakeful and a holy Malach. The Malachim are wakeful because they never sleep, and holy. And the words Ir the Kaddish is the same gematria as Paskonis. So the question is, since when does Gabriel have reshus to speak so out of turn to Hashem to say, how could you say such a thing? And the answer is, The Amr of Yosef of Chanina, this Malach has three names. Piskoin, Itmoin, Sigroin. Piskoin was Ruach Paskoinis that we said before. Shaposik Dvarim Klapi Maila. He can state things before Hashem that this is how it has to be. So he has Rishus. Hashem gives him Rishus to say this is how it has to be, and so therefore he has the ability to say to Hashem, this is how it has to be, and you shouldn't say otherwise. He's called Itmoin Shoitim Avanesem Sho Yisrael because he works to plug up the Avedas of the Jewish people. That when they're Averis, are being brought up, he has the ability, Malach Gabriel, to go and plug them up and get them out of the picture. Sigrun, and then his third name is Sigrun, Kivin Shesogir, Shuveni Paseach. If he closes his mouth, then nobody else opens. Namely, Rashi says, if it gets so bad that the Averis are so much that even he doesn't have the ability to be Malamed's course, then he stops speaking and nobody else is going to speak after him because he has that greatest ability and nobody, no other Malach beyond him has such abilities to defend the Jewish people. So Rashi says, Malach Gabriel, yeah. I think there are different opinions about that also, whether it's the same one. If we say the Malach of the previous story was Gabriel with Yeshua, then that explains why the Gemara is bringing it over here, because another thing involving Malach Gabriel. If we say that one was Matat or Michal, again, maybe this one is also, or maybe it's just because it's something involving a Malach also. Yom Mashiach Gola for second day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. Mashiach Tzidkenu has two major inyonim in him. He's a melech, it's called Melech HaMashiach, and he's also a rabbi. He's going to teach the Torah to the whole Jewish people. The aspect that he's a melech means that he's going to have an influence on the Jewish people in a makiftik way, in an encompassing way, which is caused by the bittul. When people accept his kingship, then they have a bittul to him, so that's his aspect as melech. The rav part is that he has Ashpa in a more pneumistic way. He teaches Torah, and therefore, as the Gemara says, earlier in Armasachta and some other places, a person teaches somebody else's Torah, Kielu Yolda, as if he gave birth to him. So that's a more pneumistic effect. So by combining them together, that he's a Melech and a Rav, means that these higher odors, these higher lights, the higher energies of other course, that are even higher than being invested in Kalim, still also get drawn forth and are revealed in the Kalim through the Koyach of Torah. That's Mashiach's accomplishment for us. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis, we begin simin yud zayin in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. Women and avodim knanim are potter from tzitzis, even if they wear something that has dalad kanfos. They don't put tzitzis on it because tzitzis is a mitzvah sesesh azman groma. As we know, that nighttime clothing is in principle potter from tzitzis. Okay, the Arizal says you should wear tzitzis at night also, but nighttime clothing is actually potter from tzitzis. So therefore, it's a mitzvah sesesh azman groma, and as usual, noshim v'avodim are potter from it. We have a hekesh from tefillin, the mantia teres Hashem beficha, and tefillin is a mitzvah sesesh azman groma. As we know, you don't wear it Shabbos and Yom Tov, and noshim and avodim are potter from that. So the same way, all the mitzvah sesesh azman groma, except for certain exceptions that are mentioned here and there are certain mitzvah sesesh azman groma that women are chayavin, but tzitzis is not one of them.